Now, this is actually Gareth from the future after this conversation has taken place. And I'm circling back to the beginning of this conversation because what Alon and I realized as we were busy discussing this topic is that it is much bigger than what we thought it would be. And so I'm just letting you know this is going to be a long podcast because it is really meaty and because it has a huge amount of value contained in it. And in fact, it's so big we turned it into two parts. Okay, that's it. Enjoy this first part of this episode. Welcome back to this Building a Sales Team in an Entrepreneurial Business series. This is a Raise's Edge podcast. My name is Gareth Armstrong, and across from me is Alon Raise, CEO of Raise Corp. We have just covered the halfway mark of the series, and as a quick recap, here's what we've covered so far. In the first episode, we looked at you are always the primary salesperson. Then in episode two, we looked at they need something to sell. The third episode, they need someone to sell to. Then in the fourth episode, they need to earn commission. In the fifth episode, they need to build a business within your business. And in the sixth episode, which was the episode just before this one, you, in other words, you and them, need a contract. Alon, that's quite a lot of ground that we've covered in this series, but there's still four more episodes to go. How are you feeling about this series so far?
Well, Gareth, we think there's four more. Maybe there's five more.
Oh, yes, of course.
You know how we work. Sometimes things come to mind as we work together.
What Alon is referencing is another series, Motivation for Entrepreneurs series, which was actually a fantastic series, not just for you, but actually for me as well. Because what we just seem to be doing is we unlocked more and more and more as we discussed, and it went from 8 episodes to 11. This series is 10 episodes long, but as Alon says, let's wait and see.
Maybe I can sell you another one.
Maybe you can sell me another one. Okay, so in this particular podcast, I know that there's quite a lot that we're going to be getting through. Let's set the scene right at the beginning, set the structure, and then we can begin to add meat to the bones as we go along.
Thanks, Gareth. The structure for today's podcast is about training your sales team. So that's the headline. You need to train them. But what do you need to train them on? So firstly, on the company, what your company stands for, the industry you're in, their particular department, i.e. the sales department or function, the role, the actual specific role they're in, general sales training as an ongoing thing. You need to include in that training shadowing and simulations. So in many businesses that I deal with, they view training around salespeople as training about the product. Here's all our products or our services. Here's some technical specifications. These are the people who might buy them. These are the features. These are the benefits. Here's some objections. Cheers. Go off and sell and see you later.
And if you don't do well, then they try and possibly just upskill that sales skill or technique.
Yeah, if they do that. Generally, they won't even take the time or effort to do that. In flow code methodology, which we talk about often across the podcasts, we've got a far more holistic view to training of your salespeople. We see your salespeople as critical to scale, critical to scaling and growing your business, and critical to allow you to move out of being the sole salesperson in the business. It doesn't mean you're doing the highest number of sales, but you still need to ensure that you, as the entrepreneur, take full responsibility around sales and don't abdicate it. And we've dealt with this in a previous podcast. But as we bring in a team to replace you to some extent in terms of the volume of sales, we need to make sure that they are as good, if not better than you. And so if you think about your relationship with the product, your relationship with the company, your relationship with the market, you need to get that across into your sales team. But what do we do? New person comes in, they come from a similar industry that hopefully sold you that they can sell. You say, oh, here's my product. They go, oh, it's wonderful. And then you go, all right, come with me. I'll take you to a couple of clients. Watch me a bit. I'll introduce you. Then I'll train you for maybe a day at max on the features and benefits of the product. And off you go.
Yeah, here's a few brochures.
And here's some brochures. Yeah.
Good luck.
Yes, exactly. Here's some brochures. Read all about it. And off you go. And then I'm busy. and I leave you, and then you falter, or you come in and bring in a deal, and I make another mistake, is that I might watch you selling, and I get quite nervous that you're not going to close this. So I elbow you out of the way and say, thanks, Gareth. But let me just tell you what Gareth is really saying. And then I go into that. And then I won't learn from that. I'll keep doing that. So then you become, in essence, a lead generator, not a salesperson. And I see that often in small businesses, not just small businesses, in big businesses as well. So today is around creating a framework for you, a structural framework on how to create a training structure for building a sales team. And I'm emphasizing not a salesperson, a team, because that's what we're ultimately trying to do.
So you spoke about flow code, but what is the flow code training methodology that you've spoken about? Can you give us kind of the broad strokes and then we can get a little bit further into it?
Yeah, so in flow code scale methodology, which allows small and medium-sized businesses to scale with as little friction as possible, one of the components is the people component in flow code, is how do you bring on people, ensure that they are competent quickly in their roles, and then even how to exit people. It's the whole gamut around people, which is one of the most critical factors of a successful business, is if you've got a strategy, you need the right people to execute on that strategy. So this is part of people in flow code. And a subset of that is how to train those people. Within training, there are four major areas. There's quizzes, which are open book tests. So you say, read all about this. You spoke about the brochures earlier. So here's the brochures, but I wouldn't leave it there. You'd say, okay, here's 20 questions that you need to answer about that brochure.
So an assessment of knowledge.
An assessment in an open book environment. They can check it there and you can make sure that, you know, they actually are reading, that they're not just looking at the pretty pictures.
Okay, so what you're looking for is engagement. You're not looking to penalize someone because they don't know the answer. It's just purely, let's get them into the meat of it all.
Yeah, and you want to make sure that there's some sort of consequence for not reading, albeit not a punitive one where you are kicked out the business.
Mm.
But if you get 23%, I know and you know that you didn't read that. That you don't know. So I'd make you do it again until you got 80%. Mm. And you wouldn't be able to get to the next stage without getting 80% for an open book quiz.
Now, I want us to go back to this because it could feel like we're back in school. You know, we've left all of that behind, but now suddenly we're returning to this school type environment. But we're not talking about that yet because we're going to get there. What's the next step?
The actual training, which is broken down into different types of training. So that is typical classroom kind of training, online or in person, or even asynchronous, which means that it could be pre-recorded. But generally, my preference, and maybe I'm old-fashioned, is face-to-face, where people can ask their questions if they don't understand, and you can pick up a glazed look on an individual's face to say, I can see you're not getting this. Can I give you another example of that? So training is quite comprehensive, and we're going to touch on that today. Then we move on to the shadowing. And shadowing, we're also going to talk about today, which is two ways, shadowing others and being shadowed for feedback. And then the last thing is assessments, which are written assessments or observations. In other words, I watch you do that and then assess you actually doing that. Some roles lend themselves more to observation and some more to assessments. And there are situations where you can have both. So those are the four areas of training in the methodology.
This feels like quite a chunky thing to have to prepare and then execute, you know, do in your business every time you bring a new employee in. Specifically here, we're talking about salespeople, but just in general, this feels very chunky, very big.
Yeah, it does. And it should be, because if you think about what I said earlier, you're trying to extract yourself from the number one salesperson in the business, the only salesperson. You have the highest potential of selling early on in the business. And that is because of your relationship with market, product, the business, everything. You're trying to get that across to somebody else by just sprinkling fairy dust on somebody else and saying, here's some brochures and, you know, here's some cursory information, go off and sell. You're setting them up for failure and you'll remain in this vortex of failed salespeople forever. And I know many of you now who are listening know exactly what I'm talking about, where you know that the hardest people to find are salespeople, the hardest people to keep are salespeople, and the hardest of all are good salespeople. So if you've got a view that I can get good salespeople and turn them into a great salesperson who is passionate and deeply committed to this business because they've got a business within a business, they're very clear on what is expected of them, and all the other things that we've spoken about previously in the series, we have to give them the fuel in order to become successful, and that is knowledge. And knowledge comes through training of some sort, learning and training. It's both sides, which we'll talk about later.
Okay, so it is big and chunky, but it is that way because it's so important.
Yeah.
Let's now go to where we left off with that resistance factor, because I'm almost certain. I mean, certainly if I was to go into a business and then the first thing that they do is sit me down and make me study books and brochures and then make me write a test and then shadow me, which comes later. But I've got resistance to that almost immediately, not just because I consider myself not so academically inclined, even though I can, but just because it feels like I'm back in a punitive environment where I'm going to just get in trouble and going to get wrapped over the knuckles by the principal or something.
So that means that you will never work in Race Corp as a salesperson. And that's great. That's wonderful. Because if your style is cowboy, shoot from the hip, happy-go-lucky, the probability is that you won't survive in this environment. And knowing you, Gareth, you wouldn't. But that's a good thing. And it's not the fact that you can't sell, is that you can't sell in this context. Because that is also important, that you have to fit the context of working in an environment. Otherwise, become an agent or a referral partner or a channel partner or something else where there are very few of these requirements upon you. But if you're coming into the organization and you're going to represent, you're going to wear my brand, then you need to be as close to that brand and represent those products and services as best as possible. Happy-go-lucky don't work for that context.
Where you may, through an interview process, have missed something, not asked the right questions, whatever the case might be, and then at the first hurdle, which is you're quizzing me, you're putting me in this very structured environment, I'm not interested, you at least get the person out very, very quickly early on in the process, which I think is quite valuable.
In our interview process, we mention all this and we say, whatever you think it is, it's way worse. So we make it quite scary. And some people say, this is not what I want. They want a easier environment and they can go and find that elsewhere, but not within our environment. You know, we have to the other extreme, when we bring in a group of salespeople at the same time, we've had a situation where we brought four in at one time. They used to meet at 7 to 8 every morning to have study classes around product, around their department, around process, around all the things that they knew were going to come up in the assessment. And they did incredibly well. They were highly competitive with each other and supportive of one another in that process. In other words, they knew that the pass mark was 80%, encouraging each other to get over 80%, but there was still who got 89 and who got 88 and who got, you know, 86. And afterwards, that group became a very, very powerful group of salespeople. Not only had they bonded through the process, but they were far more powerful and far more serious as a sales team than we had ever experienced before. So there is a lot of criticism about this, and this does feel, as we speak, like, oh, this is like a lot of work. But it's actually not that much work for you as the entrepreneur if you do it properly, and we can talk about that. Feels like this is going to be a long podcast.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is going to become a long podcast because we've suddenly realized that, just as in our preamble, we said that there may be other things that come up, and our plan for this particular podcast is now doubled because we're now looking at the how and also the what.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's continue with the how, and then we can insert the what as well.
All right, so we start with the quizzes. And I just want to say to anyone who's listening now that it sounds like a lot. And it doesn't have to be a lot because you can do it in stages, which is what I did and what I do with all our investee companies, is we just introduce this in stages and it builds in no time. So there isn't this big rush to get everything done in a day. And once you do it and see the benefit of it, you actually get quite excited to do more of it. So let's start with the quizzes. The quiz format is that it's anywhere between 20 questions and 200 questions. For a big process, we've got the dragon and the monster. We've labeled them as such, and they've got reputation, but they have very long quizzes, open book quizzes that relate to a deep process that is quite intricate. And they need to go through that, and so it's asking questions. So the type of questions is important, how you're asking the questions. I resist asking questions that are direct, where in the brochure it says the three most important things are A, B, and C, and then you're asking in the quiz, what are the three most important things? That's too obvious. Be a little bit more creative in terms of how you ask the questions. Then you give your scoring as a clue to the person who's doing the quiz as to how many points they need to be putting down. So if it was the thing like the three most important X, Y, and Z, you might ask that in a different way, which is, in your opinion, what's important to get across to the client? And you put three as the score. So it indicates that the 3 points. It's a little bit more obscure, but it's not direct. So they have to do that. And then, very importantly, there are questions which are not in the brochure, which forces the individual to go around and ask other people. And you say that in the instructions, that some of the questions, the answers cannot be found in this document or in this brochure or in this manual, etc. And so we encourage you to go and ask other people in the company.
Okay, so here's what I'm visualizing. I'm visualizing someone sitting at a desk somewhere, writing down and then hitting the section, and then they get up from their desk with this paper and pen in hand or whatever they
make. And start walking.
And they start walking.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they arrive at Gareth and say, Gareth, do you know the answer to this? And then the Gareth says, I don't know. Ask Peter. And off you go to Peter and ask Peter. And Peter says, I don't know. Vusi knows. Vusi gives you the answer. Now you've got it. And so you've met Peter and you've met Vusi.
And you've also written down that Gareth and Peter don't know. They need to be re-examined.
I mean, this happened literally last week in another department where the new person came in and asked people in his department the answer. And I happened to walk in and I said, what is going on? I could see he was doing a quiz. He asked me. So I said, well, ask your team here. So they didn't know. Now, because it was an obscure question, he then went around and came back and then shared it with everyone. So that has another impact or another effect. And I wouldn't say it's an unintended consequence. It is an intended consequence that anyone new coming in is actually retraining the whole team because they generally share that with the team.
Because they're going back and sharing it again.
Yeah. And they get quite excited. It's almost like a treasure hunt in the business to get the answer to that question. So that's the second kind of question. And the third kind of question in a quiz, which normally is less than 5% of the quiz. So in a 20-question quiz, you put one of these questions in, which has got nothing to do with that particular topic. So you're now getting them to, from a connective tissue point of view, to realize that the organization they're in is a little broader than just this department and this product set. That they need to go and find out about what is the HR policy on toilet paper, whatever the case may be, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's got nothing to do with sales.
So that's the quiz structure. Mm-hmm. Let's now then move into the training portion of all of this.
All right. So the training now is they're very specifically broken down into the art and the science. The science side of the training is the hard facts, the products, our processes, our policies, how commission works, the very hard factual things around your business and selling the products, etc., and being a salesperson in that business. And it needs to be structured and well considered. And once again, people are thinking, phew, that sounds like a lot. Take your time, start off with a skeleton, start building it out, start with PowerPoints and move to maybe building out a manual on one section and slowly build it over time. You don't have to rush into this. And that's how we've done it over the years.
You look for those glazed over eyes and you realize, okay, I need to elaborate more here. I need better examples, whatever the case might be.
And you need to document it and so on and so forth. So that you build over time. You have to build it. because you're trying to extract yourself from the person who's going to actually train this to some point in the future where somebody else is going to train this, not you. So it needs to be comprehensive and real and easy to understand. So your training has got the science component and then the art component, which is the softer side of selling your particular product. So an example of that would be that when you're selling, these are generally the types of people who will be buying. And this is their general state of mind. And this is generally their objections. And this is their needs. And these are their needs. That's got nothing to do with the commission structure or the fact that the price is $9.99.
Yeah, or the ingredients in the product are X, Y, and Z.
That's all the hard stuff. The soft stuff is the client, the market, those kinds of things. So that is very important in the training that you cover both. And what I see too often is a very science type training, which is here's the product, features, benefits, ingredients,
PowerPoint, step, 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 or point, 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 and then you think that that's training.
Yeah. So it needs to go into the more the art of sales side as well.
And does that training include demonstrations, pulling in other salespeople to speak about things, examples, whatever?
Yeah, all those things. And the more the diverse set of people you're training, so there isn't one monotonous voice in front of you just speaking, the better. Yeah, so it's as comprehensive and exciting as you can imagine it to be, it should be.
I mean, I can imagine that if you were to build it in a certain kind of way, it could also be a way to get people to be familiar with other people in the business as well. You could bring in your sales manager, bring in a junior salesperson and then a senior salesperson and get them to relate different experiences and whatever fits and works, but it's the opportunity to do more than just, as you say, speak about a product set or
to bring in the finance person to talk about being paid commission and them saying, listen, we know you want to be paid, but there's 10 reasons why we're not going to pay you. You didn't submit.
Yeah. Your paperwork was shocking.
Yeah. There are contradictions. You missed the deadline or whatever the case may be. So you got another face delivering that in a way, not this is what you need to do to get paid, but 10 ways not to get paid is a far more enticing topic than how commission works.
And in addition to that, what you also potentially are doing there, I think, is spreading the resentment around a little bit. So it's not just targeted at you, but then they understand that there's another function.
Yes.
There's another set of criteria in the business that they are held accountable against,
yes,
which is held by someone else. So I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's the training. And there's another component, which is self-training in there, which I'd like to talk about a little later. It's about training yourself. And then we move on to the next part, which is shadowing. Shadowing being also broken down into two parts. One being shadowing others. So if you were joining, you shadowing me while I sell. And then number two, me shadowing you. When you shadow, it's not just good enough just to come with me and shadow. I give you literally a sheet of questions to answer. So you're conscious of what you're looking out for and what you're observing.
Okay, so you are in that environment observing not just perhaps the client, not just the interaction, but even micro behaviors potentially, that all just accumulate to get to the point where there's a close or whatever the objective of that particular meeting might be.
Yeah, and it goes to the extent of what three things did you observe about the client's reaction to the process? So you're looking and you're giving that feedback. So now there's two things happening. You conscious, and you're also giving me feedback. Because now I'm in the predominant role here of the trainer, showing you how I sell. And you're giving me feedback now and saying, well, I saw as you were speaking, I saw the client glaze over. I saw them take a call. I saw them, you know,
glance at their phone.
Yeah, that's feedback to me. So there's another person in that room now giving feedback to the so-called trainer. The other thing that is asked in the paper that you're coming with as a shadower, how do you think we could improve this process? From a systems theory point of view, I'm bringing new information into the system and you're introducing new ideas to say, I think you could have sold better if, because we're in the sales context now, you could have sold better if you did ask the following questions first and go, sure, I never thought of that, right? Because now you're a new person in the system bringing information. It's not just about learning information, but you can bring information and can bring reflection into the process. So it's not just the simple, look how I do it so you can do it. You're actually adding more value. And at the same time, I'm being very pointed as to what I want you to observe by giving you that sheet of questions as to what I want you to observe and give me feedback on afterwards. What are the steps that you observed? So now they're watching. Maybe it's rapport building up front, step one. Step two, questioning. Step three, whatever, right? So you need to see if they are picking up the steps. Now, if they didn't pick up the steps, I'd come to you and say, oh, you didn't pick up the steps. Actually, this is what I was doing. And if you weren't doing something, and once again, it's good for me because of saying, geez, it wasn't so obvious. I was that cowboy. Mm-hmm. I just went in and I said, hey, do you want to buy this? Have you got a problem? Do you want to buy this? I was doing that. It's good for everyone that that second person is in observation mode. A second question could be, what do you think the probability of the sale closing is and why? The third question could be something I mentioned earlier. How would you sell differently in this situation? What would you have done differently to the person you have observed? Which is a learning opportunity for both. Because if you say, I would have done X, I could turn around and say, you shouldn't do X because we've done X before and that doesn't work in our environment.
I'd like us to all just take a moment here, just kind of step back and take a moment and reflect on our own journeys with any kind of training that we've engaged in when we were pulled into a particular environment, whether or not we had these opportunities and just how valuable this process that you're describing really is. I mean, it's incredibly valuable.
Mm. And it's quite easy to do.
Yeah.
I mean, you can down a shadow questionnaire in 15 minutes.
Well, we've just done it in a couple of minutes here. Yeah.
So it's very powerful. And now you've got it. And now, once again, you're building your arsenal, my library of shadow questionnaires. And then I'll build my training material and I'll build my quizzes. And so you build it slowly. You'll see as you do it, you'll get quite excited about it.
But you did also say that there's another form of shadowing, which is the reverse of this. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Yes, that's exactly that. That after you've shadowed me a few times and others, hopefully not just one. And that's also an important point, that if you've got a context where there's more than one person to shadow, do that, because it gives more nuance and more texture to how different people do it. So you can find your own style as the shadower. After that, I need to go in to shadow you. So it's quite a moment. We go out, you're quite nervous, and you go and try and sell. And I sit there quite quietly. I'll step in from time to time to support you or correct you subtly and try very hard not to take over the sale. And I say that on purpose because in some instances, I might need to, if you're going right off track and it's a decent client, I might need to step in.
What are easy ways to do that? Perhaps saying something like, you know, I really love what Alon's saying here, and I'd like to add something as well, if I could. Is that a nice way to step in and say it?
Yeah. Or be additive. You know, just the whole thing about over and above what Gareth is saying, there is A, B, C, and D. I might steer the direction with another question.
Mm.
So I might take over by just asking a question. You know, when last did this happen or something else happened to you? I might change the topic by asking a different question because I can see it's going in the wrong direction. That's also when we go together, I will prep you on that and say, I might need to step in. I'll try not to if I don't have to. And I will allow you to make some mistake, some level of mistake. And then afterward, when we're in the car coming back from the client, or if it's online and I'm sitting next to you, we'll sit down and we'll go through
just
my observations.
A quick review, yeah.
Yeah, and not in a highly critical way that you damn idiot, you know, you should have done X, Y, and Z. It's okay. This is what you did well. I love this, 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 and this, but we've got to work on this, 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 and this. Often it's a confidence thing. I need to be conscious of that. Often it's a technical knowledge thing, which will evolve. And so if you can overlook the confidence thing and the technical knowledge thing and realize that those will improve, it's more around their technique more than the content, because the content you can fix quite easy. And then you would say to them, okay, go brush up on X, Y, and Z. Go read that thing again. Go over your training material. And then I will coach you into a position where you will come to a second sales meeting and I'll come with you again. And once again, I will sit quietly on the side and then I will say even less. And there is a point after 3 or 4 times where I say absolutely nothing and you're ready. And this is important. You might still not be at my level, which hopefully you are, but it's unlikely because I've just got the technical.
You've just got so much more experience.
Experience.
Yeah.
But if I think back as to where I was at your stage, you would be in a better position than I was because your learning curve would have been more supported. And now we let you go and you're in a different phase.
I think that what's also important to remember at this point, there's been multiple other discussions that are going on. So if we think back to the previous episodes that we've been speaking about, the level of comfort here for the salesperson should be quite high because we've established what certain criteria are to build a successful career in sales here within your organization. I'm speaking more specifically about Race Corp. There's certainty around the fact that during a probationary period, which is what you build into your contract, that you're not going to be judged incredibly harshly on mistakes that you're going to be making, that there is going to be a training process, and you know that that training process is going to last whatever it is, 3 months, 12 weeks, whatever the case might be. And so at this point, all of this, while one could think about it and think that the salesperson that's going through this is quite nervous and quite on edge, maybe they're actually not, because we've put all of these other safety nets in place, because we've put all of these other foundational elements in place. And so it's quite a well-structured, almost safe environment to be learning.
And so it also has the other effect of taking away all the rocks you may hide under as an excuse for why you're not successful, which could be the fact that you're just lazy, a terrible salesperson, you know, a BSer. So it could be all those things. So it's also very revealing as to your character in that space, because there's really very little reason why you shouldn't be successful if I've set this up for success.
And so up until now in this process, it really does feel like you're being set up for success. Mm. But then you do hit a bit of a tough moment, a tough step, which is the assessment step. And offline, you said to me the key difference between the quiz step and the assessment step is quiz is open book. Assessment is a whole other ball game.
Yeah, assessment's closed book. And so assessments are, I think, critical. Unpopular. No one likes them. No one likes to invigilate them. No one likes to mark them. But I find that since we've introduced more than 10 years ago assessments into our training process, people take it seriously. We've had cheating syndicates.
Wow.
We've had all sorts of things come from it. I mean, we've gone through an evolution of making sure that we've got multiple assessments, that the questions are jumbled. Like, we've had to become quite advanced in how we're assessing, because even though it's invigilated and they give back the questionnaire at the end of it, you know, somebody might take it with their camera, a photo, or sneak out. Somebody didn't arrive for assessment because they were sick and steal the assessment paper or whatever the case may be. But once again, very similar to the quiz, now you're asking them to sit down for 2 hours and write an assessment, which is open-ended question, multiple choice, match A with B, those kinds of things. And people take them seriously. They do. They take them seriously. It's 80% pass mark in our environment. It's linked to the performance agreements, linked to probation. If they don't pass, they get another chance to study and pass. They come nervous. They have study groups. You know, there's lots of tears. And in some people feel it's punitive, and maybe it is old-fashioned and feels like school. But the upside is too good. And I accept all those negative characterizations of assessments. And gosh, I hated tests and assessments at school and university. But I learned and I studied and I knew the topic. If you think about a pilot, if you're a passenger, don't you hope that dude or dudette had an assessment and passed?
And then another one. And then kept up to date.
Don't you wish that they didn't sort of say, ah, I've got this flying thing. There's a storm. I'm going to work it out. If the landing gear gets stuck, don't worry. I've seen it in a movie.
I'm just thinking back to those earlier characterizations of me. And I've seen it in a movie, Alon. Don't you worry.
Yeah. You wouldn't want that with a pilot.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about your business, you know, pilots got your life in their hands. But as a salesperson, you've got a whole bunch of lives in your hands. You've got the whole organization's lives in your hands. It's all their jobs.
It's the lifeblood.
It's the lifeblood of the business. And if you are really terrible at it, people lose their jobs. The business doesn't grow. There's no career growth. There are no bonuses. You've got people's lives in your hands. So if I view you as a salesperson in that way, I want to make sure you know what you're doing.
But there's also that other element, which is the way that the salesperson views themselves. And so you can definitely position this in that way, which eases the resistance perhaps or the frustration around it, but also just helps them understand the seriousness to which you value them and you are valued in the business.
That's beautifully put, beautifully put. And I haven't thought of it that way, but it's exactly that.
Well, Alon, this has turned into a long podcast, and I'm going to make the suggestion that we split into two. Let's do a part two where we speak about then the actual content that you want your sales team to have a deep knowledge of. Let's do that in a part two, and let's perhaps bring this particular conversation to a close, which was the how of it. And then in the next podcast, we'll do the what. Are you happy with that?
So now it's an 11-part series, but who knows? This could turn out into 12.
And that's the voice of Alon Ray, CEO of Ray's Corp. I'm Gareth Armstrong, and we will be with you in the next podcast in this series. If you'd like to stay updated on when that is released, please go to racecorp.com where you can sign up for notifications there. Alternatively, go to your favorite social media platform, and undoubtedly, Ray's Corp will be updating you there as well. Make sure you follow them, and we'll be with you in the next conversation.